The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Caravan of Courage, an Ewok adventure from 1984. If you do not wish to have this movie spoilt, please watch it before listening to this podcast. Is it a caravan full of family goodness, or does it just take courage to watch it? We checked out Caravan of Courage, an Ewok adventure from 1984 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy?
Hello and welcome to the season 5 finale of The Rufus Project for 2018. We are going to attempt to redeem Caravan of Courage, an Ewok adventure from 1984, and we'll get on to how that movie came about in just a minute. But first up, I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Holland. I'm joined by my good friend and co-host,
Christian Fletcher. Thank you so much, Trevor.
Oh, my pleasure. And I think we better keep on moving because we've got somebody else waiting up to the side. We have the suggester of Caravan of Courage, actor, dancer, teacher, production manager, advocate for the Southeast Queensland film and TV industry, and host of the excellent podcast On Set with Rachel Lee. May I present the suggester of Caravan of Courage, Rachel Lee. Rachel, welcome to the Rufus Project.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Great to have you on board, and thanks for suggesting the movie for us, too.
I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I've got to be very tight-lipped in the meantime.
we try not to give too much away at the start, but sometimes it sneaks through. But we'll see how we go. So Rachel, what inspired you to suggest Caravan of Courage?
It was one of my favourite movies as a kid. So you have to remember, it is an 80s movie. And yes, I was an 80s child. So, you know, a lot of movies that came out then, you know, I suppose had an impact on my life and my decision, I suppose, to want to work in the performing arts and creative industries. And this movie, I don't know, it was just, to me, it was such a feel-good movie. The character and the storylines was just, I suppose, everything that it should be that you'd want for kids to see and things like that. So, yeah, I just really enjoyed it. And I think that I know it's got a lot of flack over the years, but I think that for what it was, it should have done a lot better than what it did.
Fair enough. I've got that better. Shall we treat it with some respect then? We'll see how we go again. Now, if anybody out there hasn't seen Caravan of Courage or An Ewok Adventure, Caravan of Courage, or Caravan of Courage, The Ewok Adventure. I've seen it listed as all three of those. I've got a little synopsis here for it. Wicket the Ewok and his friends agree to help two shipwrecked human children, Mace and Sindel, on a quest to find their parents. Does that sound accurate to everyone?
Yeah, it sounds pretty accurate. And just, you've reminded me again about those good character stuff. Names, which we will get to. But just the fact that kid was called Mace.
It seems to have got a bit of flack over the years, but I did a little bit of digging. And, I mean, this was originally released as a TV movie, even though it did get limited cinematic releases in a couple of countries, including Australia. But it was nominated for a Primetime Emmy for an Outstanding Children's Program, and it won the Primetime Emmy Awards of 1985 for Outstanding Special Visual Effects.
It's quite funny when you think about it. I think when you look at it now, obviously, 30 years later, to what it was then, the special effects back then, off the back of, I suppose, the Star Wars films as well, for what it was, I think they did well, and based on the budget they had as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, yeah, let's just say I may have a few comments about some of the effects.
If you look at it now, I think obviously, you know, we're so used to seeing, you know, the big Hollywood budget sort of stuff. And I think that that's one of the things people sort of went into this expecting, you know, another big budget sort of Star Wars type thing. But this was actually a low budget sort of telemovie that they made. It wasn't a big budget feature. So, and the story, and the story was actually made, I believe, was because of George Lucas's daughter, who had an affection for the Ewoks, which came about in one of the Star Wars movies. And so it was sort of a storyline that spin off that came from that.
It's quite interesting with George Lucas, with his history. Well, I won't mention a certain Star Wars special that happened in the 70s, but I was quite surprised that Lucas wanted to go in and sort of touch the television special, I suppose. But I know this is probably more, as you said, a telemovie. But gosh, without giving too much away, this is one of those movies that does scream telemovie that, oh gosh, I think we'll give this a limited release in cinemas afterwards.
Yes, I don't think you can compare it to the other one. And to be honest, I haven't actually seen that one, and that one's one that they don't want you to know about. But this one, I think, had, you know, I mean, maybe if it had a bit more of a budget and a bit more promotion, it had a lot more potential than what it did.
Yeah, before we get too much further into, I suppose, discussing the movie itself, what we'd like to do here is cover over a bit of turkey trivia, as we call it. So we talk turkey about the movie, some of the facts and figures, and then we can talk about some of the trivia. I mean, I've got a few things here. We've already mentioned a couple of things. Caravan of Courage is rated 5.5 out of 10 on IMDb and had a budget of $3 million. Now, a couple of interesting things I dug up was first up that this film takes place between the events of Star Wars Episodes 5, The Empire Strikes Back, and Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, which was interesting putting in that context. And the Ewok language isn't just random noises, it's actually based on Tibetan.
Oh, it's interesting. I don't know if it was just me, but after a while, you started to almost adapt to the language by the end of the movie. I don't know if it was also too, you know, obviously they'd start saying words. We'll get to the whole Star Cruiser repeated ad nauseum. But, you know, you'd start to get a few words. And I was thinking by the end, maybe I've picked up the language. I don't know if that was a conscious effort because, you know, again, mentioning that special from earlier from the 70s, deciding to open a movie with 15 minutes or 10 minutes of pretty much grunting or Tibetan-sounding language, it was probably a pretty big thing to ask for.
I think the language that they had for the Ewoks in the movie was a created language. So I'm not sure if it was one of the first created languages for a film or telemovie in this case. But if you look at, you know, some of like Game of Thrones, they've had, you know, created a language for that and things like that. And I think this may have been one of the first instances where they created a language for a telemovie.
Again, Lucasfilm always pushing the boundaries. And that's the thing, very cutting edge with all this sort of stuff. The whole concept of doing this as a telemovie, I think, too, was a big thing. And yeah, I'm sure there was merchandising and all sorts of tie-ins like that.
Merchandising Ewoks? Who would have thought?
I don't know if there was back then. There wasn't as much merchandising as you would see today, definitely.
Because I know the 77 Star Wars film, you know, was one of the first to sort of kick off this whole merchandising wave, because I think Lucas was the first person to not sell off the rights. Like, he retained a lot of the rights to merchandising because they didn't really have much faith in it working, and then he made millions from toys. But, yeah, I think probably being not one of the major films, yeah, I don't really see them, aside from maybe releasing a few little plush Ewok toys, yeah, I don't really see them doing too much with this one.
I don't know what they do with it now. I don't think I found out what this was. I mean, this was the first of two made-for-TV spin-offs around the Ewoks, and Star Wars fans to this day remain split as to whether these should be considered part of official Star Wars canon, but since Disney acquired Lucasfilm, this is now one of the Legends tales, which means it is no longer officially canon in the Star Wars universe. Oh, poor Ewoks.
It's a shame. It is a standalone film, though, I think. It's. I don't think it fits within the canon of Star Wars so much, except for the fact that they're in a Star Cruiser in the space, you know, fallen out of space. But there's a lot of stuff, I suppose, that they could have put in it to keep it related to Star Wars if they wanted to, and they didn't do that.
Well, you say that, but also, even though it's no longer officially canon, there's a great online fan theory about the girl in this. Sindel Tawani is the character's name. A lot of people believe that she grew up to become Captain Phasma in Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Oh, I didn't hear that one.
I know, it's new to me, but I just thought, wow, that's that means her life got dark fast.
Yes,
and
yes,
not
well,
knowing anything about Star Wars, that's gone over my head.
Well, although there is a sequel to The Caravans of Courage, and if you probably watch that, then you could probably say yes, maybe she did end up going down that dark path.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen that one yet. We may have to come back and revisit that one at a later date.
Just don't overload me with too many Star Wars movies. We seem to be always, I think, Rachel, I'm not a Star Wars buff, and it's interesting, the only ones we've watched have been for the podcast, Phantom Menace, the holiday special, and this. So
oh, really?
You can sort of see where I'm coming from.
No, definitely.
Well, I know we've been skirting around the Star Wars Holiday Special, and I think it may be one of the reasons they didn't go for the original title for this movie, which was the Ewok Holiday Special.
Oh, probably a very good decision there.
No, I think Caravans of Courage was a much better title, and I've always remembered it and known it as that. Where the idea for that actually came from, because my first thought is, well, there's no caravans in this movie. I don't know, but definitely the courage is there, and the whole, you know, story with the kids trying to sort of reunite with their parents is definitely, as I said, a very family-friendly story.
I actually think the, do you know how we see them, you know, this is jumping ahead, but we see them doing their quest at the end to try and find the parents. I think they refer to when it's a group of them like that, where they've got, well, you know, they're carrying that thing that they're all inside. I don't know. I think they refer to a group of people like that as a caravan. I think that's what, where that comes in.
Yeah, it's sort of not really referenced, but yeah, that sort of makes sense.
Yeah, the caravan comes in about halfway through the movie,
I was waiting for an RV, but, you know.
All good. Now, before we talk too much more about the movie, now, here on the Rufus Project, we take movies with less than stellar reputations or performance, and we work on seeing if they're redeemable, if there's redeeming qualities about them, and if, you know, we think that they've been misjudged, shall we say. But to do that, we need to set our baseline. So what I've done is I went to Amazon and I dug up a review for Caravans of Courage. The title of this review is, in all caps, AWFUL! Why? Simply awful. To think as a kid I actually liked these movies? As an adult, my own kids were bored to tears and kept asking me questions. I had no idea how to answer. Why? To think that these are considered Star Wars is more like admitting that The Black Cauldron is a Disney movie. These need to be destroyed, all the copies recalled and destroyed, and never spoken of ever again. 1 star.
They're obviously not a fan.
I can see where he's coming from, or he or she is coming from. When I watched it again recently, I made my other half watch it as well, and he was bored to tears. And was thankful that I only went for an hour and a half.
Oh, gosh, that was what I was happy about.
But if you go into it with no expectations, then you can't be disappointed. But if you are comparing it, as I said, with the movies of today, you are going to be disappointed. It's still in the old 4:3 format. It's not in widescreen. It's, you know, the special effects are today probably laughable. And the story itself, I mean, the acting maybe isn't great. You know, remember they didn't have a big budget, so
maybe
some of the acting could have been better. I mean, if you look at the actors that worked on that, you know, the two actors that played the two children, they've really not gone on to do anything else at all.
Could you blame them? The kid looks like a reject from Xanadu.
She is a spitting image of my niece.
Oh, God.
Scary enough, but yeah, it's
wow.
Funny.
Okay, well, one thing I did notice straight up, particularly with this movie, after we got past those classic movie studio logos, always nice to see, was the whole like almost Disney documentary style narration that was going on over the top.
Oh,
I think it was Bert Ives or Earl Ives. I can't remember that actor's name. Off the
I think it was
head.
Bert Ives, because I even looked at the end. I'm like, Bert who's Ives, the guy? Yeah. I've got a note here somewhere going, I think, oh yeah, my note's just that narrator's voice. So, yeah, there's something about, I'm just glad it didn't happen too often. But, like, obviously we needed the narration for the, you know, a lot of the, what was going on, especially for the first bits. But, gosh, whenever he came back in, it wasn't a welcome, you know, a welcome arrival.
I think they did that more to, and this is why I agree that it doesn't belong with the canon of the rest of the Star Wars, is because if you look at all the other Star Wars, they had that scrolling introduction. And with this, they didn't do that. They had the narration instead. And I think that was one of the reasons that makes it different to the rest of the Star Wars as well.
True, true. I mean, I think it was useful a couple of times because at least it avoided that other holiday specials issue of having 20 minutes of just you know, Wookiees going at each other with no subtitles and nothing else. Oh my god, that's still painful. But then later on, I mean, he does cut back in at one point, and you can see exactly what's happening on screen, and it's obviously, it's completely clear. But then he narrates, basically just describes exactly what's happening in front of you. You're thinking, we don't need that right now. Come back when they're just talking to each other in the Ewok language that we can't understand and give us clarification then. Why tell us what's going on? And even the brother at one point literally narrates what's happening in front of him. And we're going, you don't need to do that. And frankly, this kid's acting range is not that good to begin with. So can we actually just have him do useful things rather than just tell us what's happening that we can already see? I mean, come on, guys.
Well, that's one thing I noticed about this movie is it's taking a very, you know, as much as it has, yeah, as Rachel said, a, you know, a good heart, and, you know, and we'll talk about later, you know, the sort of morals of it, but it's a very slight plot where they've had to stretch it out, and there's so many times where that kid just kept explaining things to the point of, like, I've got a few notes later on, but to the point of, yeah, exactly, stating the obvious. And it's funny because after we've got that first narration and you've got the parents shouting and looking for the kids, I think at one part the father's going, hello, and, you know, yelling out their names, where are you? And the next thing the mum goes, have you found them? And it's just like, oh, well, obviously not. And there's so many different parts in the movie where it was like, and definitely more so with the younger kid, especially later on when we've got, well, we'll get to it, but the sister being sick. How many times have you have to say the word sick in about 2 minutes? But it was just definitely fleshed out a bit too much.
Mind you, that was actually, I think, the most convincing performance she did was just, you know, lying in there going, ooh, even though half of her moans and groans were actually overdubbed. There were some seriously overdubbed sick scenes in this movie, and the dubbing was not very good.
I did notice that. but once again, for its time, that's what they could do.
So, and I don't know, not being a big Star Wars fan, but I'm still aware of Mark Hamill in the 1977 one, and obviously the other ones as well. But I don't know if the whole casting of that guy was, I don't know if that was, he was supposed to look so much like him. That was just all I could think the whole way through.
Well, I did notice that. Likeness. He looked very much like a young Mark Hamill.
Yeah, give people, I suppose, another point of contact, I suppose, so they know, yeah, a point of reference, sorry, you know, because they would have been so familiar with the big movies as well. But yeah, we're definitely struck by the bad acting immediately.
I was wondering why the brother was dressed as a rebel pilot, though. I mean, it didn't really seem, I mean, is that just casual wear in the Star Wars universe, or was he a rebel pilot?
Well,
like, was he flying when they crashed? I don't know.
I mean, the whole start of the story was quite interesting in that, because I often, that one thing I did wonder about was, you know, that you see the parents looking for their kids, but they didn't really have much of a look inside the spaceship before they left, did they?
Oh, that's what I was thinking. No, strange. Because it was the same, that was the same vehicle, not vehicle, ship that they come to later on and find the girl in, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I was so confused. I'm thinking to myself, considering they'd been looking for them for ages, and then meanwhile, you've got the kids go, or the brother going, or Mace going, the sister going, why aren't you worried about mum and dad? They might be dead or something like that. Whereas, yeah, as you said, the parents just sort of, they have a boy look.
They do. It's terrible. It's like they just call out a couple of times, which if somebody's been in an accident, they're probably not going to hear you because they probably haven't woken up yet. Sort of thing.
Oh, exactly.
So yeah, so they're just sort of, they're not here. Oh no, let's go. You know,
I was actually pretty impressed when they did actually find what's her name? Sindel. I had Lindel written down here, but when they first found her, I'm thinking to myself, I don't see any kid being that calm if that Ewok face came peering into me in this little alcove. I don't know why she didn't get even more upset, because some of those faces were pretty bloody terrifying.
Well, back then, I thought they were quite cute because they were sort of like these little teddy bears. But looking at them now,
about the eyes, the glassed over eyes, just
yeah, and the lack of expression that they have because they're very static faces. So the masks that those guys had to wear, and looking at it now as well as someone that has actually done a lot of suit character work, I really feel for those guys having to jump around in little furry teddy bear suits.
And considering in those first 20 minutes, you've got a lot of scenes where I think, I always say Wicket, but, you know, all the characters kind of play fighting. And I think we had 5 minutes of them just rolling around and playing pranks on each other. So they would have been quite hot in those suits.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know if it was freakier, though, because a lot of when they're talking, like their mouths don't even move. And then later on, there's a few close-ups of Wicket and you see his mouth moving and he keeps sticking his tongue out. So I don't know what was freakier, the fixed mouth expression or the slightly moving tongue sticking out. They were both just, yeah.
Yeah, I did notice that.
They reminded me of Teddy Rubskin. You know those things where you just put the cassette tape in the middle? It looks like a really bad one of those has gone through the wash. That's what an Ewok looks to me. Looks like to me. But then we were saying, yeah, I'm sure in comparison to a lot of the other creatures we see, like later on we've got those stop motion creatures that appear, and some of those faces were pretty terrifying, especially for a children's movie.
Yeah, definitely. But as I said back then, I didn't find them terrifying, and I think maybe that's a child thing, because children tend to see things differently than we do as adults. So maybe we saw them as little teddy bears or whatever, so we didn't find them as scary. But looking back now, I mean, and it can depend on the child as well, I guess.
Now you just get scared by the movie as a whole. Sometimes you wish you could just keep watching it through child eyes, though. But then I just think about things like, the Neverending Story. Like, that's wasn't a scary movie to me as a kid, but there's some pretty scary things in that. So, yeah, it's very – and interestingly, came out the same year. So, yeah, very much of its time.
I've got to say, I know we mentioned the special effects a few times, but I've got to say – I'm a bit of a fan of the old school stop motion monsters. I mean, there's a certain, they look so fake now, but my goodness, there is a charm to those, even if they are ones with giant toothy mouths that try to eat children. But, it's still good to see.
But what I was really surprised about, because didn't you say this was like a $3 million budget or something, just for something that came out from Lucasfilm, I just found this, even for the time, the standard to be quite low, like considering the effects that are in the main Star Wars films. But then again, this is a cheap, as Rachel said, a lower budget telemovie that was made. So I don't know, that kind of, it just didn't fit in with the Lucas standard that you're so used to and would have been used to from the big films. So that's probably something that kind of stood out a lot to me.
Yeah, well, I know that they did. I mean, they've obviously saved a bit of money on creature effects, because I was quite surprised to see some of the indigenous creatures of this forest moon of Endor, where they live, in the fact that goats, alpacas, chickens, and ferrets are apparently native creatures to this science fiction land.
I love ferrets. I was so happy to see it. That, to me, was the star of the film.
Oh, that ferret was so cute.
I've always wanted one, but they're illegal, I think.
it was quite cute to see all that. And I actually thought, too, because one of the things you look at is referring back to the fact that they were in a Star Wars movie, but then suddenly it's like in this one, it's like they've never seen humans before. So they've got that whole, what's going on thing going there.
Yeah. I suppose because before Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, which obviously takes place a lot on this particular forest moon, they'd never... I guess it's their first encounter. But one thing I did notice and was in the back of my mind was that in Return of the Jedi, when the Ewoks capture Han and Luke, they are preparing to eat these people. Okay? So the back of my mind is thinking, these are actually wild, vicious carnivores. So really, these kids are not in a good spot right now.
Well, and that's the thing. It's almost like the kids, with all their bad acting aside, they've managed to win those Ewoks over, because we find out later when they... I've got here Gorax, or is it Korax? The place that they end up being travelling to find the parents. And I think the narration says something about Ewoks have never ventured there before, but I'm thinking to myself, but these two little kids come along and, yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah. Oh, no, they've never returned from there.
Returned. Okay, so...
Yes.
no spoilers. Do they return? You'll have to wait and keep listening.
It's a kids' movie. I guess it's pretty obvious that they're not all going to be eaten by a giant. But anyway...
And that's probably why they've done it, as well as the fact that they have made this a kids' movie. So they've tried to, in some ways, maybe redeem the Ewoks to say, well, they're not all, creatures that like to eat people. It's like saying, all humans are the same, and we're not. We're all different. So,
And I think that they always seem to give the Ewoks, little personality traits that make you, make them endearing to you. Like little things like, is it just me, or there seem to be a lot of rope snapping in this movie? But you know that part when they're about to launch that glider off, and I think something lands on it and knocks the rope, and he gets
off.
The
goat.
I'm like,
the goat eats the
rope.
The goat,
that's right. The goat eats through it. Again, why the goat was there, I'm not sure. I would have loved the ferret to be doing it, just saying. But again, you're just seeing it flying through the breeze and this glider. And, you can see they were trying to make these characters, endearing, which they were essentially, in the parts when they're play fighting and all that kind of stuff. And as irritating as it was, that whole Star Cruiser scene, where they're trying to explain that. Okay, we get the point. Yeah, I know she's trying to explain what a Star Cruiser is, but I don't know, that the way they were acting, they started to become quite adorable to you, and you could start to, appreciate them a lot more.
Yeah, but I don't trust their rope. You mentioned the rope. I don't trust their rope, because after the dad lands a hang glider somewhere in that forest and throws the rope to the two Ewok kids and they're climbing down, that rope snaps. And there's multiple times when rope snaps. And then at one point they're lowering down Sindel from the wise Ewok's hut or whatever it was in the trees. I'm thinking, I wouldn't be trusting that rope to lower anyone, guys. These guys don't make good ropes. And then even during the dramatic rescue, they even have a close-up of a rope fraying as someone's climbing down it. I'm thinking... Yeah, don't trust these guys. They don't make good rope.
Well, that's what you get on a $3 million budget.
Bad rope.
It was an afterthought.
And farmyard animals.
They obviously didn't spend it on the script.
Well, I believe that the...
There was a script?
Yes. But I believe it was all shot on Lucas's farm, the ranch or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Skywalker Ranch.
Yeah, which is probably why the animals.
Of course,
there.
He had the money to have his own ranch.
Indeed. But, I mean, I think the only thing worse than the Ewok rope was the brother. I've forgotten his name again. I should remember his name.
Mace.
I'll try that again. Mace, yes. I should remember Mace, yes. He really is a dopey kid. Like, he sees a creature peeking out from a tree. So what does he do? Reaches his hand right in and gets bitten. And then a bit later on, he goes running out into the night, into the forest that's already attacked them once. Then he just keeps touching stuff and going up to stuff and thinking, will you learn? You're on an alien moon here with everything, even the river tries to kill you. Get the hint, kid. Leave things alone.
Sorry, go, Rachel.
No, I was going to say, do kids ever learn?
Well, that's the part that was really quite conflicting, is they were kind of making this Mace kid out to be essentially the hero of the movie, the kid that saves the day and, he steps up and does all this sort of stuff. But gosh, he was a whiner. Like, I love how they're like giving him all the different weapons and he's like, I don't want to rock. And then there was another part, I don't want to ride in that. You just think to yourself, step up, man.
And your blaster that only works temporarily when you talk to it, encourage it, and go, come on, fire! I don't think that's how blasters work.
Yeah. I think
they just want to have scenes of him running through doing the shooting. Sorry,
no, that's all right. I think Sidel was more the lead than he was, as far as the story goes, because I think she's the one that actually had more of the motivation for wanting to find the parents than he did.
Yeah.
There's been a whole awkward scene where he's going on about how much he didn't get on with his parents and he just wants to see them again. And we're going to be, oh, well, if you weren't such a whiner, we might sympathise with you.
Yeah, exactly. And you feel like saying, look, obviously we find out what happens with that rock I was mentioning, but you feel like saying, okay, kid, there's obviously some reason they've given this to you. It's some weapon, like, bear with it. But, you know, he's all cool to sit back while the, can't even remember what he was called, but, you know, the wise man, the magician-y sort of one. That ends up bringing out that big spinny top. He's all fine with that, but just, it won't seem to take many orders from the other guy. But then, actually, that reminds me even later on when they actually, spoiler, kill that character off. I was actually really quite shocked for a movie of this kind to have that in there.
I mean, it is a kids' movie involving animals from the early 80s, and they were notorious for actually, you know, having a lovable character die at the end. I mean, you see it coming a mile off, so it was not unexpected at all that one of the Ewoks was going to sacrifice himself quite uselessly in this particular case. There was no reason for him to do it, but you know, it was bound to happen.
I don't think that was surprising too much either, because you look at the sort of programs and other movies that we watched back then. You had Bambi, whose mother dies. You had Watership Down, the Roadrunner, all those sort of cartoons and things like that. So I think maybe 80s children were prepared for that a little bit more than today's children.
Well, I find even as a film exhibitor, you know, you'll screen G-rated or PG films, you know, for kids from the 80s, and some of the things in it you think, is that the correct rating? Look, I've done a screening of Dark Crystal, and I think by the end of it there was two kids left. They were terrified. You know, whereas nowadays I think things are a lot more sugar-coated for kids. I think, us 80s watchers, I think it's worked out well for us. It exposed us to, you know, this sort of stuff.
I have to agree.
We can watch Caravan and Courage dry-eyed. That's how we're tough.
But one thing I find clever about, like, not to jump ahead, but you know how, Rachel, you were mentioning earlier, you know, it does have a really good message, and we find out it, at the end it's very much about the whole family and things like that. But it is clever how they sort of show that, you know, the Ewoks as a family. And I think there's even a line later on where, oh, we're proud fathers, aren't we? You know, I do like how they kind of, I don't know what the word is. I can't think of the word. But, they sort of give us something to compare, you know, with the Ewoks versus the humans. So I suppose that made that, you know, we started to relate a lot more to them by the end, definitely.
Yeah, the inspirational final scene where they go on a lot about fatherhood and then back it up with that narration again. Oh, boy. Oh dear, but I mean, before we get to the end, I suppose we need to talk about the real bad guy, don't we? The giant whose name I've completely forgotten that I should have written down. With some pretty impressive superimposition of the giant. Mind you, he didn't look that big when he came through the forest to capture the parents at the start, though.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, like I know I mentioned earlier that a lot of the effects didn't sort of live up to what I was expecting. But yeah, that creature at the end was really well done. And for a little whiner like Mace, I was surprised he was keen to tackle it.
Yeah, the monster was known as Gorax. That was the monster's name.
Oh, that's it.
Gorax. That's it. Yes, thank you.
And he was me thinking that was a place where they ventured to, but no, that's Gorax. Because that's right, where they end up getting into that cave with the, I hate to say it, one of the fakest spiders I've ever seen in my life. I felt like it was one of those ones from, you know, a really bad ghost train or something.
It reminds me of one of the very early Doctor Who episodes where you could see things.
Very, very true. But that whole spider thing. I mean, we get the little, even faker one when Mace is going across, and then the bigger one comes down to be dropped down that apparently bottomless cavern. Now, these guys hadn't done any climbing, so that spider falls down a bottomless cavern, then suddenly appears in the room near the entrance where Sindel and the other couple of Ewoks are sitting. It's like, how did it get there? What's going on? Is that a different spider? And when they dropped the giant down that ravine later, which was obviously going to happen, of this thing, immediately thought of thinking, don't do that, it's going to rock up where the other kids are.
A little bit predictable, probably.
But I just found it was interesting. Like, when we obviously said they used it a bit later, but the fireflies, where they're like, oh, she eats giggles. And I'm like, this scene's going on for ages. Obviously, we find out later the firefly or the really bad ray of light that keeps shining on the screen. She ends up, you know, helping out a little bit later. But it was one of those scenes where I'm like, are they going to use this again? Is there some relevance for this creature? But again, when they turned it into a bit of a laughing scene, that was one of those things where it's like, oh, we've got to have a moment like this to sort of appeal to the kids, you know?
So true.
Drop the tension for a little bit.
I've got to say, I do find the term the giggle eater slightly ominous.
But I thought it was quite very ingenious that he ends up using the... Because when he takes the axe off the guy that dies, I'm thinking, oh, what's he going to do with this? And then he ends up using it pretty much as a seesaw or to get him up into... I thought that was pretty adorable how they managed to sync all that up. And you always look at things like this and go, there would have been some issue. He wouldn't have made it. There would have been something. But no, it just seems to happen so effortlessly.
And I think what it was...
And that's when I got really, really worried with the rope.
Oh, yeah, true. The fireflies were good guys in this one as well. I think there's been quite a few films and that where fireflies have not always been, you know, they've been might be sort of helpful, but they usually bite people or things like that. And I sort of remember the fireflies being in it, but then I was half expecting him to get bitten, and then I'm like, oh no, hang on, these were the good guys.
Yeah, and they did end up helping at the end too. Yes. So that I thought their purpose was just another little scene. But yeah, as we see that it led to a them helping them later.
Yeah, distracting Gorax. So, but actually, because I mean, I know they fight Gorax. Just coming in with some of the magical shenanigans in here. I mean, we've already had the magical spinning top, which showed where the parents were, but that staff that one of the Ewoks has that he uses to hypnotize the spider, later on uses it to physically pull rocks out of the ceiling of the cave. So I'm thinking, why bother hypnotizing the spider when you probably could have used that to fling it across the cabin into a wall? It just seems pointless, because hypnotizing, it seemed to take way longer than pulling a rock out of the ceiling. You know,
yeah.
just saying.
It looks like one of those staffs that has many purposes, and I have a feeling if he'd really dug into all the different purposes, he would have found a better solution than that.
He could have easily done that.
Or the fact that the staff can turn into a lizard and a mouse for I don't know what reason.
Oh, yeah, that was strange.
Which happens earlier. Which doesn't impress Mace at all. He's just going, yeah, so what? It's a lizard. Dude, you just saw magic.
He's probably like, I don't care. I've got a rock that I can shake. I've got a Kinder Surprise version of a rock. But I don't know if he'd worked out at that stage. But I love how it's almost him throwing it away in disgust is his way of stumbling on it, cracking open.
Pretty much. Oh, dear. Yeah, so, oh, God. Oh, yeah, this is all over the place, but that's fine. Who wants to recount the movie?
Exactly. Watch it.
Speaking of magic, the sudden vine that appears when they need to get across a cavern after they cut down the spider's web, I like how it managed, Mace swings over and just lets go of it, but it manages to swing all the way back to the other side so everybody else can grab it and swing over. That was handy. Just one of those little things thinking, there's no way that happened.
That's how I feel about that axe move at the end. It was just like something out of a very well-rehearsed Cirque du Soleil routine.
Well, at least he's useful for something.
Actually, we were talking about the spider earlier, but do you know how the spider ends up getting on the magic guy? I can't remember which one he ended up on. Yeah, and I was really quite surprised that he went straight for the stabby-stabby motion. I was like, oh, hang on, this is quite full-on. You know, good way to protect yourself, but I definitely wasn't expecting it in a movie like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Ewoks are vicious hunters. It's obvious. I mean, again, referring back to Return of the Jedi, when they're celebrating at the end, there are a lot of empty Stormtrooper helmets. So I'm wondering what's for dinner in that particular scene in Return of the Jedi.
And the thing is, the kids and the parents would have been so hungry, they probably would have still eaten those Stormtroopers.
Well, more like the heroes of Star Wars, the main movies. But anyway, let's not go there.
No, this movie is much friendlier than that.
Very, very, very true. There's so many bizarre things. We pretty much get into the end, but of course it has to finish with a bit of an Ewok dance-off. And again, we get our inspirational final narration, but it doesn't quite make up for the fact that the family is still stranded on this primitive moon with a star cruiser that's apparently like an IKEA flat pack almost spread out. They've got nothing to repair it with. They're trapped.
Maybe that's why he keeps going on about fatherhood. It's like, well, that's all we've got now is our families. We're not going anywhere.
I think that's where it leads into the sequel, which I have to admit I haven't actually watched, but I do know a bit about it. And it definitely doesn't have the appeal that this first one has.
All right. We're going to have to watch it sometime to find out
what it's like. I was going to say, I must admit, I did pinch myself a few times while I was watching this going, gosh, I hope I'm watching the right movie. And not the sequel. Because as Trevor had mentioned last week and today, it's known by very many different names.
It is. And, the sequel's The Battle of Endor, which follows Sindel mostly. So she's pretty much the star of that one as well.
So. I'd be interested to see if she's still got that Xanadu outfit on. But yes. We'll have to wait and see.
I hope so.
I'm obsessed. You got to love how I cross-reference previous Rufus Project movies. Always a good
segue. Well, it was the 80s.
Yeah.
True. Very, very true. You got to love that curly hair and the white outfit.
It's just the headband. The headband just gets me.
The headband, yeah.
She's just missing her roller skates.
And then at the end when they end up putting that that hat on her that's got the wings on it and all that, I thought, oh, you know, she doesn't need any more. But as you said, it was 1984, so.
Woohoo. The 80s. That was a decade. And, okay, so I think really that probably can a good place to wrap up our conversation of Caravan of Courage and Ewok Adventure, or whatever you want to call it. So I suppose now what we need to look at is our overall impressions of this movie. Was there anything redeemable in it, and was it redeemable overall? Now, normally the suggester goes last, but because you are a special guest here, Rachel, and you basically came in, I think, when you suggested it, almost as championing this movie, can you please let us know your thoughts about the redeemability of this movie?
Sure. So my strongest feeling is the storyline. I think it's a great storyline, and they had a lower budget compared to the other movies, but they they still had a mold to the story, and it was still a feel-good, family-friendly story. If they had better actors, bigger budget, I think this would have gone to be another sort of in the realm of Labyrinth and all those sort of movies. But I think the storylines there is great and has potential to become something better. And I'd actually like to see them remake it with today's sort of abilities with special effects and things like that, because I think it could be a really good film for kids.
Cool, cool, cool. So would you? Are you redeeming it, Rachel?
I am, because I still love the story.
Excellent.
Even though it's bad acting.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, bad acting can go either way, let's be honest. But there we go. So we've got one vote for redeemable. Christian, what do you think?
Well. I do, speaking with or hearing Rachel's thoughts has definitely opened my eyes, going into this movie or this chat today, in terms of, the message. It does have a great message, especially that whole, message of courage. And probably the one that spoke to me the most was the whole message of family and love and all that sort of thing. And obviously we're seeing that from the Ewok side and the human side. But look, unfortunately, I couldn't get past the telemovie feel of this, going in as not a big Star Wars fan, but someone who was quite used to a standard. This is something that almost felt like, Lucas should have learnt from the holiday special. And, again, having the opening scenes with no English being spoken. And unfortunately, it just didn't sit well with me because of that. And unfortunately, due to the script, I felt that it was quite a slight plot that was stretched out to try and be this 90-minute movie, hence a lot of what we said about them repeating things or stating the obvious. I remember the film Willow, which incidentally has Warwick Davis in it as well, but I felt that was very similar to this, but Willow was much more of a higher standard and sort of more of an adventure film that I was expecting from this. I was actually really surprised this was thought to be a good idea. I think it would have been a little bit too boring for children, just saying, but I know everyone's got different opinions, but unfortunately I'm going to have to say this is irredeemable, this movie.
No!
Sorry, Rachel.
Oh, gee, no pressure on me at all with the casting vote here. Oh, dear, because I'll say straight up, this is one of those ones that I got is on the border, so I was kind of relying on a chat to sort of help me go on the way. So here we go. Look, this is definitely a kids' movie, but it really did gloss over a fair bit. The pseudo-documentary style, I mean, it did help to explain what was happening a few of the times, but most of it was completely unnecessary. It did have some intervals of cuteness interspersed in the bad acting, creepy live action, and stop-motion puppet work, which were almost nightmarish, but still charming in a kind of way. It also conveniently forgot the very important point, though, that I mentioned before, that Ewoks eat people. Look, I mean, it's got dodgy dubbing. It's generally plodding plot. And look, I couldn't really sympathise with the main characters. I mean, it does have its charm. It does have its good story. There is enjoyment to be had. But at the end of the day, it just doesn't quite make it. So sorry, Rachel. I can't redeem it. There we go. All good. So Caravan of Courage and Ewok Adventure, 2-1, not redeemable. I'm kind of disappointed. I would have liked to have finished on a high note
maybe we needed to have seen it as kids or you know, as Rachel said, during the 80s. I don't know. I wonder if that affection would have been there, but yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't see it with those eyes.
Ah, oh, it's all good. Oh, I understand. Good. It's like a fine wine.
Maybe we can change things with Battle of Endor down the track.
Yes. We're gonna have to get you back, Rachel, to do Battle of Endor at some point. That's a definite.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that one. I do know.
Just not too soon. I can only do a Star Wars every 2 years.
Okay.
you bought it on yourself, Rachel. You got no one to blame but yourself.
Oh, well. It was worth a try.
Yep. All good. But, I mean, look, here on the Rufus Project, we do try to redeem movies where we can, so we do like to finish on a high point. Now, I went back to Amazon and I did dig up another review to wrap things up. The title of this one is Cool Collector Item for the Everyday Star Wars Fan. I remember finding this in the $5 bin at Walmart like 15 years ago. Haven't seen it since. I think one of my roommates borrowed it and never returned it. Got this as a birthday gift for a friend. He watched it with his nieces and nephews. They loved it. I mean, who wouldn't want an Ewok as a friend? 5 stars.
Wow.
There you go.
I wasn't expecting 5 stars, but... Yeah.
It's funny. I was expecting them to say ferret as the friend would be a better option, but anyway.
It's funny you say that though about it being found in the $5 bin. I picked up my copy on DVD a few years ago, and it must have been for the 30th release, year release or something, and you can't get it again now. I think that I've seen it. Someone mentioned it, asked me where I got it from, and I'm like, oh, it was years ago. And now you can get it on eBay for like $150.
I'll definitely hold on to that because that would have been sort of, before all these new remastered versions of a lot of the films have come out. Yeah, hold on to that. I've even tried to get the rights to screen it and flatly been told no. And then I'm like, well, there'd be no way to really. I'd have to borrow your DVD, Rachel, just saying, if I ever did.
Yeah, well, it's definitely, whether or not it's redeemable, whether or not you like it, it's definitely become a collector's item.
Don't ever sell that.
And it's not available on any streaming service either. So, it's not the easiest movie to find, but it's out there. So, if you decide to watch it, best of luck, guys. Anyway. So that will wrap up the Rufus Project for 2018. Now, I do say that. Of course, Christian and I will be back for our traditional Rufus Project Irredeemable Christmas special in a few weeks' time. So keep an eye on the Rufus Project Facebook page to find out more about that. If you want to go back through our archives, you can find us visiting things like the Star Wars Holiday Special, Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever, the He-Man and She-Ra Christmas special, and We Wish You a Turtle Christmas, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Christmas special. So we still haven't finalized what we're watching this year, but yeah, we've got some pretty major things to try to top. Let's put it that way.
Oh, definitely, yes. And thanks, Trevor, for getting one of the turtle songs in my head again. By referencing that.
Anytime. but if you want to listen or experience other stuff in the meantime, Rachel, I know you've got a few things happening at the moment. Is there anything you would like to plug?
Oh, well, apart from my podcast, I hadn't really thought about that. But, yeah, so I do The Onset with Rachel Lee now, which is now on iTunes and Spotify. And, yeah, I've got a few episodes up there just with some interviews with some local awesome directors and local filmmakers, so I'll keep plodding along with that, and I'm excited to see what 2019 brings.
Weren't you doing some fundraising
for I forgot about that. Yeah, I'm terrible. So many things on. So I'm currently working on a web series called Nightingale Lonely Melodies, and which is a web series that's been inspired by the Shadowhunters and Mortal Instruments series. So very exciting sort of stuff to be made locally here. We've got a great cast and crew. And so at the moment we are trying to fundraise for that, crowdfund it, because we are making it ourselves and we get no support from anyone. So, if you'd like to support us, you can find us on Facebook or on Instagram, Nightingale Lonely Melodies, and let us know.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Of course, I will get all the links from you and put them in the podcast description down below to make things easy for people as well. Christian, what Christian Fletcher events are we wrapping up the year with?
Well, yeah, interestingly, I don't have as many coming up as normal. So, we are rounding down for the year, but still sticking with the movies. So to end out the year, it seems to be tradition now for Christian to do double features of Princess Bride and Dirty Dancing. So get in now. We've got a few screenings happening on the 7th and 8th of December at Metro Arts, and also on the 4th of December at Dendy Cinemas Cooperoo. We have Greg Sestero, the star of the infamous cult film The Room, and the author of The Disaster Artist. You may remember the film that came out recently with James Franco, which is it was based on Greg's book. So we'll have him live in person presenting his new movie at Dendy Cooperoo. So best thing to do is head to christianfletcher.com or Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook. And I really should start programming for 2019. But keep a lookout. There'll be some many more weird and wonderful things, as well as your regular favourites.
Fantastic. So on my side of this conversation, the backlog since we launched the Rufus Project podcast version of the Rufus Project is all available on Spotify now. And over the break, I'm going to start releasing the Rufus Project Rehashed, where the previous movie-based versions prior to our changeover to hosting this all ourselves are going to be released on the Rufus Project feed, so you can catch up with those. And nothing at all with wanting everything on Spotify. No, not at all. You've also got What the History, the podcast I do with my wife Susie. We've still got a couple of episodes of that left, or maybe one more, but that's available at wthpod.rufusproject.com, and of course also on Spotify and Stitcher, or wherever else you want to find it, Apple Podcasts. We're on everything. Due to, tightening of content idea restrictions on YouTube, I have launched Rufus Project TV. It's still a bit of a work in progress, but it's fully functioning. That's at tv.rufusproject.com. So that's where you'll find all the video versions of our podcasts, along with the revamped and up and running again One Credit Challenge, where I take on old arcade games with just one credit. Whew. There's some other projects I've got in the wind as well. So best way to stay up to date on what's happening is to keep an eye on the Rufus Project and the What the History podcast on Facebook, where I will be giving all the updates and all the info as it comes to hand. And of course, again, that's where we'll probably announce what our next Irredeemable Christmas special will be. So stay tuned for that.
Looking forward to it. I think. I haven't heard what the movie is yet. I shouldn't say that.
Yes, yes. Still to be finalised, but I'm sure it'll be something spectacular.
Oh, I know.
Okay, excellent. So, again, Rachel, thank you so much for joining in and suggesting Caravan of Courage. Again, I'm sorry we couldn't redeem it for you, but who knows what the future holds.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. All good. And Christian, as always, we may not be able to redeem the movies every time, but these chats are always awesome.
Oh, definitely. Always look forward to them.
And so, yeah, so that's the Rufus Project signing off for 2018 with our finale, I guess. And we will catch you over Christmas and in the new year. Farewell.
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm BB, said it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
I have a really bad feeling about this.